popular demand. And today I've got Longshot. He was a fire chief, firefighter for how many years?
33 years.
I've got Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Johnson, retired Air Force pilot. I've got Trooper, who's a threat analyst. He's a cab trooper, and he's just as bitter as I am.
Not as bitter as you.
Okay, well, you hit the guardrails. Yeah, and there you go. So I want to start off today with the shooting in Minneapolis, because I know you all have an opinion. God knows I have an opinion. So let's start there. Who wants to kick us off? Raising your hand? Really?
Raise my hand.
I'm trying to coordinate.
Right.
Go ahead, Longshot.
Yeah, so I'm on Substack, and I have zero, friends that are libtards, but they constantly get pushed in my Substack feed, and it just burns my ass to see how many of these people are so freaking just unaware, intentionally unaware of the problems with these mass shootings or these shootings. The psychological damage that this whole trans movement has put kids into is, and the drug cocktail, all of it. I mean, everybody knows who's paying attention. It just burns my ass. And, you know, I don't know how to fix that. You can't have a civil conversation with these people that are dead set on freaking believing what they want without paying attention to any of the actual facts.
Well, you're working against a couple of different things there, right? So you're working against the media. You're working against the belief system that we lost Colonel Johnson. It is not a good roundtable without an hour of cursory IT setup. So there he is. He's back. Troop, go ahead. Sorry to cut you off, Longshot. There's a lot of things that we're working against here, right? We're working against the media. We're working against the PSYOP that's been Orange Man bad. We're working against Big Pharma that doesn't want to admit that SSRIs and all the hormones they're pumping into all these trans people are affecting and, you know, making people psychotic. We're dealing again with, you know, a system like Discord and the gaming systems and gaming chat communities that allow grooming and pedophiles and suggestion to be pushed into the consciousness of the public. And then we're also looking at, 30, 40 years of narrative that this is a problem that is only affects white males, which is not true, right? So, and they're working hard to scrub the records on this, because look, the short answer I have on this, which I agree, and I'll get to your comment about crossing the aisle. The view I have on this that I think is salient that nobody's talking about is the fact that the whole story, the whole narrative is too perfect. The weapons with all the labels on it, the Russian diary that he used to obfuscate his thoughts in his head, the manifesto that came out, the videos that are creepy. I mean, there's too many parts of that are perfectly choreographed and architected to be real. And that's where I'm still letting it develop to see how, another 24 hours to see how this develops. But I can already tell you that they're going to villainize everybody that goes after the trans community. It's not the trans community. It's the pharmaceuticals, and it's the whole process for somebody going through a transition, right? They're pumped full of hormones that could completely screw with your body. And then they put you on these SSRIs to help through it, which SSRIs have already, they're on the label. They say may cause psychotic episodes. So there's a lot of things you're working against there, right? And then there's the belief system around the whole trans movement and the color revolution that has people, they're just off the rails with this belief system, right? It's no different than the Q crowd, right? The Q crowd told us for years that Trump was going to come back, good guys are winning, Trump saving the day and all that. Trump comes back and they're still looking at timestamps from 2018. They haven't moved past the fact the guy that they wanted back in office is back in office, and he's doing things both that both benefit the country and don't benefit them. But you can't talk to them. You can't have a logical conversation with them because they're so wrapped up in the belief system. So we have a number of different things that are playing against the narrative and playing against the individual. So, and I, you know, I've experienced the same thing. Like if I was in a chat room or jumped into this show yesterday and raised my hand to say something because somebody said something that was incorrect about the military, and literally they banned me from the room for no reason. Like, okay, it is what it is, right? Sorry, Drew, if I cut you off.
I agree with that. I put that on my first Rumble video yesterday, was about this. Where does it begin when we all drank plastic flavored water, right? And long shot, I know you've been there too. As a firefighter, but you're deployed in a place where just everything sucks and we're drinking these BPAs and these estrogenic compounds, but we were already out of puberty. So not to say that these things haven't affected us, but the stereotypical pattern of every single one of these shooters is they're gender conflicted mentally, physically, emotionally. Almost all of them have been on these SSRIs. And if you go all the way back to the womb, I mean, their mom was probably drinking the water bottle that was in the car all day. They haven't had a whole lot of social interaction. You go to a restaurant now and every kid has a device in their face. They just have no social awareness. I mean, when I was a kid, you sat down, you shut up, you didn't interrupt adults, but you were forced to see how people interacted. And then you develop your own way of interacting. I think there's got to be a link as far as the I'll just call it the health status of these people. But really, the first thought that came to me when I read this yesterday was, my God, for the first responders. And long shot, I know you're going to resonate with this. I've had to do this, like in the Rodeo Chetiskay fire, where you have to deal with the survivors of a disaster. These guys got to go in there. They have to assess a room. They have to save kids. They might lose kids. You got parents that are showing up. They're stacking up. Where's my kid? Where's Timmy? And all these guys are absorbing all of this, and they're focusing. The easy part is to focus on the emergency at hand, but then they have to deal with panicky parents and grieving parents and media shoving microphones in their face. They have to go home at the end of the day with all of this shit that they had to deal with. And I am not marginalizing one bit, one kid, one parent, one teacher, anybody that's in the middle of these violent interactions. But when somebody shows up and they just randomly start killing people, it's trauma for the people that are subjected to that. But those first responders are coming in, and this is a little different from a car accident or a fire or something. Unfair, horrible things happen to people all the time, and first responders have to deal with that. But when you have kids, they're supposed to be in a safe place, and you got to go in there and figure out, where do you begin? Where do you begin? Because these kids are just, they're hiding under pews. They're running into rooms. Are they breathing? Are they not breathing? So regardless of what led to this, we all have gallows humor on some things. I thought, gee, it's getting to the point where you can't use a white pen to write on your AR anymore. Look at the pattern. So some of these guys are developing behaviorisms and patterns from their predecessors because they want to get on the news. They want to be famous. This is their final act of defiance. All of the programming that has gone into them up to that point, I think we need to go back further than the news story and start unpacking, where did this germinate at? What was the trek? And it was media, it was Hollywood, it was these external influences on these games and school and everything else. But what are the compounds that they ingested, either pharmaceutical or in the environment, or the hot water bottles in the car is my go-to thing, just to kind of put a bracket around it. But the first concern that I have, and I still have, is that these guys and girls are coming in there and they're just dealing with broken kids. And then they have to deal with the broken kids' parents and family. And then they have to go home. And those guys are not on the news. So just if anybody wants to think about something or pray for something, I would definitely pray for the people that are coming in there following a disaster. And they still don't know if it's an active scene. You know, most of the fire departments here in Phoenix and Arizona, any police department is going to stage officers before they roll fire. So they're going to come in. It's a violent situation. They're going to make sure it's clear before they can roll fire. So there could be children that are dying out there, and it might be a half an hour before they're found. So the cops have to witness that. And I can guarantee you that there's been times where the police have had to literally watch someone die because they couldn't clear fire to come in because it was too dangerous. And then the fire department comes in and they're like, fuck, you know, I could have saved this kid if I would have got here just 5 minutes earlier. So this is very serious. And it goes so far beyond the social constructs of your sexuality or what fucking weapon he used, or, you know, how do they always find these soft targets? How do they always find these places where there's not a Colonel Murray or a trooper or anybody with, you know, with a weapon anywhere around? They're pretty good at that. I'm a threat analyst. If I was going to shoot up 10 places and think about where would I get no resistance, I might get 7 of them right, and then 3 out of 10 I'm wrong and I'm going to die. How do they every single time they can find a soft target? But anyway, but my whole thought on this isn't on this transgender discussion. It's what's happening with the psyche of these first responders that are like, man, I don't know if I can do this anymore. You know, and then they either eat their gun or they just check out. And now we have a skills gap. So it's very serious. It's not to be, you know, I would ask people not to just make stupid memes about trans people carrying AR-15s. It's very serious.
Well, I think, can I butt in? I think.
Go ahead.
You know, I was thinking about this whole thing and I have a couple ideas, but overall, I think that this is part of the whole WEF agenda. And part of it is that they want to, you know, create disunity. They want to create division and divide and conquer. And all these shootings do all of that. And then the other thing is that I feel like it's part of their whole take the guns agenda, because they, you know, if they make it so that there's a set of society that's absolutely nutcases and can never own guns, then there's two, you know, either you've got to prove everybody's not a nutcase, or you've got to, they're going to say, well, since we can't stop being people from being trannies, we got to take guns from everybody. As I could see their argument already, they're going to be like, well, if we have all these crazy people, we have to take guns from everybody because it's not safe. Which, you know, obviously all of us are like, F that, you know, the hell I'm going to give my ability to defend myself away when there's mass shootings happening on a regular basis. So that's kind of my thing. I think it's all part of their agenda. But the other thing I think is that, and I've seen a couple people talk about it. What's his name? Black Scout Survival. He was talking about it on a podcast he had yesterday, I think. And he was saying, and I've been thinking this ever since the Tennessee shooting, is just people got to start self-organizing. You got to get parents, concerned citizens, veterans, whatever. And we just got to start creating like neighborhood watch where you just sit outside of school. And the problem they've got, like in many states, is like you're not allowed to have a firearm within 1,000 feet of the school, you know. But I'm kind of like, you know what? Screw that. I mean, are we going to let all our kids get shot at, or are we going to defend them? And I think that if it gets organized and done the right way, law enforcement isn't going to try to enforce on people that are guarding their kids, you know, is my 2 cents. But anyway, that's the couple things.
That's kind of a sketchy situation there. One of the things that has been moving forward over several years, like where I'm at, they've started to integrate fire medics and rescue medics into the SWAT teams for initial stabilization. Some SWAT teams do have medics. And now to kind of improve on that, they're including in training for initial entry on those. But yes, true, spot on. It's hard, man. It's hard. And when, you know, for everybody who knows, sometimes you just don't sleep with the stuff you've seen.
One thing about the 1,000 feet in a school district. So in Arizona, the reason why people get concealed carry permits, or one of the reasons why you want one here, even though we're a constitutional carry state, is because you can have your weapon in your possession within 1,000 feet of a schoolyard. And it's not really many places you can drive in a city where you're not within 1,000 feet of a schoolyard. So I'm not saying, you know, we should let children die so we can obey the law, but there is it was a pretty interesting thing that they managed to sneak in there, where if you're within 1,000 feet of a schoolyard, you can't have this, or if you're in 1,000 feet of a schoolyard, you know, you can't be a vagrant or whatever. That pretty much eliminates your ability to travel with a weapon in your vehicle, regardless of what the local weapon laws are. And believe me, if an officer doesn't like you and you're like, yeah, you know, I'm declaring a firearm, and he just happened to pull you over in a school zone and he doesn't like you, you get screwed, you know, without a CCW. So, and that's just in Arizona. I can't speak for other states, but I hear what you're saying. And then the other concern about that, from a law enforcement perspective, is if you have a bunch of random people running into a school with weapons, and you know, all you know is you had a shots fired call, that's a very dangerous situation to put yourself in. So, you know, what are you going to do? So sometimes you just have to go in, you know, with the aid kit, right? And just go and look for kids. But I understand the, you know, the concern, but our position now of just being non-apologetic with the leftists and with all their old mantras and all their victimhood and all their bullshit, just, you know what, we're not going to tolerate it anymore. We don't care. Your opinion is irrelevant. We're going to go this way and, you know, pound sand if you don't like it. So just we've got our voice back as a conservative community, and we cannot let that go. We can't begin to capitulate again to, oh, well, just don't say anything because you'll cause the scene. I told my wife, fuck that. I'm done with not causing a scene because I have retarded family members that want to bring up stupid shit. I'm not going to introduce something into a conversation that I know is going to be inflammatory, but I'm certainly not going to sit there and take it either. And everybody just needs to take a stand. Don't be that, you know, the MAGA uncle that just already makes people feel uncomfortable, but definitely stand your ground and speak up and speak out and just put an end to this. Just challenge it. Make them afraid to speak up.
Well, I think that's part of that should be part of our genre moving forward, right? Is, I mean, so I'm seeing several narratives develop, and I've seen them develop over the last several weeks. The Civil War narrative, there's not going to be an election in 2028. I mean, Gavin Newsom's working hard right now to push the narrative that Trump is going to do away with elections. It's all they have left, right? They only have a few cards left to play, right? So watching this narrative, you know, develop, watching the narrative around Civil War develop, watching the narratives around, you know, trans hate, because they did this before, right? When the cancel culture stuff started back in 2003 around the Iraq War, and, you know, if you're not for the troops, if you're not with us, you're with the enemy. If you're not one of us, you're one of the terrorists. If you say anything bad about the troops, you're anti-American, right? It's the same rhetoric. It's the same MO, the same storyline. They're just using it now for trans. And look, it tells you something, that the public is fatigued with this. The public is completely sick of this narrative. They're sick of the trans movement in general. They're tired of the gay and lesbian infiltration of every institution. And it's all classic communism. It's all, they packaged it and bundled it and set it up so you can't say anything negative. Otherwise, they attack you as a transphobe, right? But the trans part of this is not, it's not the salient point. The right. Salient point is the fact that this person was mentally ill and packaged to put in front of the public. And the reason why I'm saying I want to wait for this to develop is I'm waiting to find out which one of the former FBI or CIA was working with this guy on Discord to get him activated to go do this. It's sitting in there somewhere. It's either in his journal or it's in the log files from his Discord time. I mean, those are the two pieces we haven't put together, right? But the last two shooters, they had a Discord handler, they had SSRIs, they had hormones, they had the whole nine yards, the manifesto. This was so well packaged and so well put together. that it literally looks like it was a theatrical performance. Like, if this guy really was doing this on his own, then it was probably one of the best stage performances yet. Yeah, he was on the radar. Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, let me drop this real quick, and sorry to interrupt you. So I've got a really close friend who is a trauma ER nurse and also worked in the psych ward in the ER. And he says every day, it's not a super huge hospital, but it's one of the top 10 hospitals in the country. He's like every night they've got a trans person that comes in that wants to eat a bullet. So it's a pretty sick thing, and we definitely need to look at the psychiatrists, you know, that are, you know, he was kind of describing, you know, they start them off with, well, Butrin, their depression doesn't get better, and it just escalates, and, you know, then they think they're some other sex that they are.
The Guidon thing, the Minority Report thing, Bird Dog is on, he mentioned it, but we're going to have so much fun with that, you guys. So this Guidon thing, Steve, are you going to talk to that? That's the,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'm following the story.
The technology they want to put in is just like Minority Report. So they have these scanners. I'm sure it's going to be a Palantir thing, but they're looking
for the pre-crime stuff that Bill Barr put in 2018. Yeah. Okay.
We're having fun with that. I'm going to build a bot army that just shit posts about writing white letters on ARs and going to the community center and, you know, just put bullshit out there on all the social media channels times 1,000 to just hobble that thing. It's ridiculous. So that, yeah, they want to do that. Yes. They want to surveil us. It's no surprise, but just we have technology to just liquidate that. So
I think this is a good transition point. We're on a path now where they're going to install this surveillance system, and ultimately it's going to fail because there's a lot of people that are waking up. And I think that what we're seeing, because, you know, a good friend of mine was here for the last couple of days, and, you know, he's not read into any of this, but he knows that the system is broken beyond all belief. And he knows that the system, there's Mike. We'll bring Mr. Mike Ferris on.
Mike.
So Mike, good to see you, brother. Appreciate it.
You don't know Mike? Coffee. Mike.
Yeah. Mike runs coffee. You know, Mike, he does a show a day. It's about a show a day. Yeah. I can't hear you. You're muted.
You're muted, Mike.
Yeah. You're muted. Nope.
Well, you know, if Mike is having audio problems, I don't feel so bad.
Amen. Bracken was done.
How about now? Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah. Bracken was supposed to be on. He may still jump on. I know he's having issues with his computer. So I sent him all the information. We'll see if he jumps on and sucks the oxygen out of him. So. But Mike, good to see you, brother.
Good to see you guys. Thanks for the invite. Yeah, I was listening on Rumble. I had to mute the Rumble channel because it's on delay compared to where we're at right now. Yeah. So I had to click that. So I did a 2-hour conversation with Bracken earlier today. So I just
put it
on my Substack.
Right on. Yeah. So the I think it's funny when I did the Yava Pi preparedness. Spoke up there on Saturday, and literally as soon as we were done talking, the first thing that said to me, hey, when are you bringing the round table back? So here we are. So we're trying to do this on every week, every Thursday. So, and I know Steve from Pop Show Grunt Speak was planning on being on too, so it'll be a pretty interesting crowd if we get everybody on. But what we were talking about is just actually transitioning off the shooter, and we were transitioning to the pre-crime stuff and the surveillance system that they're trying to put in at breakneck pace. I'm I'm I've here's the problem. I hear a bunch of stuff every day for people in the system, right? But I don't know what to believe and what not to believe. And that's part of the problem, is that there's so much noise. It's really hard to decipher what's real and what's not. One thing I do know is there is definitive action against the cartels right now. And I do know that there's definitive action around the January 6th stuff, around the court cases related to Trump. I know there's grand juries that are convening, but until somebody's arrested for 215 days, and we saw 205 days, I think it was, I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, we're 205 days. We still don't have any arrests. So yeah, I believe when I see it. But they're definitely building the surveillance system in the background, and Palantir's going to be the bleeding edge of that, building profiles, maintaining profiles, monitoring. And then I was reading today that YouTube goes in the back end. And Alex Jones actually mentioned it like 10 minutes after I read the article. But he was talking about how YouTube and some Facebook go in and they'll edit your video without your knowledge. How's that for scary? So we could do a whole show, a whole round table, and they could go in and edit everything we say. I've either stunned you with silence or you're all just...
No, I was waiting for you to be done. I wanted to contribute if you don't mind, Steve.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I talked about right after the election, where I've said this a million times for people that listen to me, but I was wrong in terms of, I didn't think Trump would get reelected, but after he did, I looked at it, I was like, God, this is just so weird that all these big tech people, social media giants, Bezos, Zuckerberg, Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, a lot of these people did everything they could to not let him in 2020. And they just stood down or supported him through 24. And I've heard all the things. Oh, they kissed the ring. They knew he was going to win. I don't buy that. I never bought it. Either.
No.
And I never thought all these people that were going to get in were going to make any type of impact. Big Pharma was not going away. The Doge stuff, I wasn't buying into that because they never cut money. When did they ever do that? So now
they did confirm and institutionalize some of the Doge cuts, right? But they hired the IRS.
Yeah, but then they're restaffing. Did you say, I'm sorry, you said they fired the IRS?
No, they're rehiring right now at the IRS.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're bolstering the IRS up again. I saw that last week. But my point is, with all this, I mean, why I thought this, and it looks, I mean, more apparent, especially with Thiel, with Palantir. I mean, the DOD has bought, they either bought a stake or they invested money into Palantir. They bought a stake in Grok. I mean, people see what's going on here. Like,
yeah, they're doing exactly what is so in Iran and in Egypt, they both do the same thing, and they're using that model right now. If you're a general officer in the Iranian or the Egyptian military, which is why neither one of those countries will ever go back to being a republic or democracy of any kind, they basically get ownership in all the defense companies. So they have these, they sit, they're basically anointed into these kingdoms, and they have all of this power within all the defense industry and other industries. And Trump's doing the same thing, right? DOD is investing in buying, you know, getting profit sharing from all these different defense contractors. But really what it is it's control. And he's doing they're building the same thing.
Let me add to that too, because I go back to my conversation I had with Matt Smith back in February. Now, Steve, I know you listened to that, where we're mirroring a system of China, right? Is it more, and I'm posing this as a question to all you guys, are we mirroring more of a system of China where it's a fascist mercantilism, you know, the government is deciding, they are taking initiatives, and they're buying into these companies in order to start building these things themselves.
Yeah. And the tell was when they commissioned those execs into the reserves as lieutenant colonels. I mean, who runs the programs in the military? It's not general officers. It's lieutenant colonels. That's who runs all the programs and the new weapon systems across DOD. the fact that these guys, he made them reservists, swore these guys in, that bypasses the private-public partnership, right? And because they're black programs or they're classified programs, there's never going to be a FOIA request on that. So they're basically burying a lot of this under the guise of secrecy while they're building out all this infrastructure. And I think ultimately it's going to fail for a couple of reasons. But in the meantime, it looks like, you know, it looks worse. It's probably worse than it looks. And it's probably farther along than we think. And at some point, people will get wise to it and they'll, you know, they'll wake up. But it's a matter of what do we do at that point, right? And there's lots of things you can do to disrupt data centers and disrupt communications between data centers without having to blow things up that will bring the whole system to a standstill.
I think a key thing that piggybacks on what both of you guys have said here about Palantir is I remember talking about this back around the election, and Palantir stock spiked right after the election. And if you look at events that have happened since then, every time there's something that's basically pro police state, pro exactly what Mike just said, Palantir stock spikes. And it's done, if you look at the chart, it's been performing fantastically ever since the election. So until recently, just today, it actually was down. But so to me, that tells you everything. I mean, why is Palantir spiking up during the election? Why is it constantly doing better under Trump? It certainly looks to me that it's a favored company, obviously.
But also, I think with that too, I mean, Palantir is not new. Right. I mean, this was a facial recognition to identify all the people that were January 6th. And that's what it comes. I come back to 2020 in terms of like who these people were backing at that point. And it was to do everything they could to get Trump out. But then they now all of a sudden they're ushering in, you know, they ushered in this administration. And, you know, it appears to me that they just took over MAGA. So I don't think it's complete yet. And to what Steve said, in terms of if it works or not, I time will tell. But the one thing that gives me an indicator that it won't work, because the more processes, the more workflow, the more technology you put into place, things just eventually break. And you see that with, I mean, I call UPS, I can't get a hold of anybody. You try to call, I mean, any of these major companies, you can't talk to anybody. So right. Like, it eventually the system will break.
100%, especially
if go ahead, Steve.
I was just gonna say and then the system will break. It could break under its own weight. It could break because of, you know, intervention. I mean, there's lots of variables, because the piece we're not talking about is AI and algorithms that they're using to do the monitoring, and if it has the capability to cut people off and, you know, isolate their bank accounts, etc. I mean, all of it rolls into stablecoin, all of it rolls into currency manipulation, all of it rolls into all these other facets like the social scoring system in China. I think it's going to be more sophisticated than that. But I think it's very interesting that, and this is the piece I haven't connected the dots on, I don't know why they're moving at such a breakneck pace to get this thing rolled out. It's almost as if they're up against the clock if you look at their actions, because it's more than just methodical. It's they're just basically putting it in the public's face, like, we're doing this regardless, right? This is not a Zionist thing. I don't know if it's a transhumanist thing. This is surveillance. And you don't hear anybody in the military talking about it. And look, the talking heads, Pete Hegseth and all the rest of those guys, that's all kayfabe. Those guys are all, they, as far as I'm concerned, they're all actors. The only one that's not is Tulsi Gabbard. But I don't know what her agenda is. And I don't know what her piece of this is. I know she's all about no surveillance. She's made that statement publicly. So I'd be very curious to see where she fits in that landscape. But I think two things that have happened this week that we definitely need to discuss. We need to discuss what's going on with the CDC, because all of those firings and then revoking the emergency authorization for mRNA, that's a big thing. That's not a little deal. And they did that just this week. So, you know, that to me, that's a positive, because I've been screaming at mRNA since one of my friends died from it. So I'm seeing some positive things.
What took them so long? Have you heard any explanation of why it took them so long to revoke that? I mean,
here we are. The HHS, so there's layers in the HHS that allow the system to operate outside of the director. It's set up and designed just like DOD set up and designed, so that every Joint Chiefs of Staff that comes in, they can't just take the military off the rails, right? So the budget cycle in the military is a 5-year cycle. It's called a POM cycle. It takes 5 years to build the budget, to approve the budget, and they have these different, you know, sustainment pieces that they do in 5-year increments. HHS is set up the same way, so that there's checks and balances, so there's not a dictator at the top that pushes down the rest of it. So my guess is they were positioning and figuring out within the regulations and within the code how to push people out and how to do that. Because remember, you know, RFK was new. He's new to the government side of the house, right? That's not his forte. And I think they were positioning to do it. But what I don't get is why Trump is still beating his chest about warp speed. Like, dude, shut the fuck up. Nobody wants to hear that shit. Yeah, warp speed was this big high speed thing. But guess what? It's killed a lot of people, right? So I don't know where the fuck I was going with this. I was going somewhere with it and completely lost my train of thought. So I'll just hand it off to you, Lunchhead.
Okay, yeah. Speaking of 5-year intervals, is that Congress is supposed to have oversight and review of every one of these agencies every 5 years. And I don't think that one of these agencies, except for maybe DOD, or as Trump is now saying, the War Department, if you hadn't caught that, he's given the green light for them to change DOD back to its old original name. But all these agencies are supposed to be audited and gone through a full review every 5 years to see if the viability and the mission is being met. And not any of these freaking agencies, the CIA, FBI, HHS,
Wasn't the Fed audited? Sorry, long shot. Wasn't the Fed audited?
Yeah. And he's doing away with the oversight committees too, which, if you understand, if you know anything about the oversight committees, they were just basically gravy positions to solidify policy that nobody liked. So by him moving that out and taking that out, that's a huge move too. I mean, the hard part for me is I'm seeing good things, I'm seeing bad things, I'm seeing narratives that I don't like. Like, I don't like this narrative about troops in the city, right? Because there's multiple lines of operation. If you guys watched the show I did with Luongo, we went back and forth a bit about it, just like we did about Revolution. But the point is, you can have multiple lines of operation going by moving troops into the city. The fact that we're deputizing them or we're going around posse comitatus, people don't realize how dangerous that is. Because there's no guardrails about what we use them for. Now, am I worried about them declaring martial law? Fuck no, because there's not enough guard members and there's not enough troops to occupy the entire country. So good luck with that. But it does set a precedent that is going to be very dangerous to get out from under if any kind of kinetic action takes place. The country will have to not only watch that transpire, but then figure out how do we get out of that? Because it's easy to escalate, but it's very, very hard to de-escalate. And the same thing, and to be honest with you, I think the reason why he's moving troops into the cities is he's staging troops in cities he knows are going to blow up when they start arresting people. Because if you look at where he's putting those troops, he's putting them in heavily blue cities that both the Clintons, Obama, and Newsom and Pelosi are all powerhouses in. And look at Gavin Newsom over the last 5 days. The guy's in a panic. he's trying to figure out desperately how to keep Trump out of, you know, how to keep troops out of California. And he didn't get a choice in LA when we moved the Marines in there. So I could see a lot of, I could see this as a staging operation. And I could also see it as something even more nefarious. But they're obviously responding to actionable intelligence, because this is not even a thought process. They're just issuing the orders of moving the troops. And I've heard rumblings of troop movements from active duty, but I'm not buying into that until there's solid proof of that. But I've heard several times now that they're moving troops in proximity to some of these big population centers just in case things get out of hand. So that tells me,
I mean, all those big, they're all run by fucking commies, you know. So do I feel bad? You know, I don't know why the hell they don't arrest these governors that are and local officials that are just flat out breaking the law and, you know, saying suck on that, you know. So maybe it's part of a bigger picture. I don't know. But, you know, they sick the National Guard on people during COVID in many states. So I don't care. I mean, they could all just freaking fall out of a helicopter for all I give a shit.
Yeah, I think there's something bigger here though. And in terms of what this possibly could be, Bracken and I were talking about this, and I'll pose this. I said this question to him and I'll pose it to you guys, because I don't know. I mean, this is just theory. You know, is there an economic collapse potentially happening? Is it getting people more comfortable with the idea of seeing military uniforms in their cities? You know, is that, are those possibilities? I've heard the theory, Steve, in regards to like arresting people and, you know, Chicago, DC, potentially LA. I mean, I've heard that. I mean, I just don't see it.
I don't either, but you know,
I mean, I'll
believe it when I see it.
Yeah. I don't even know if I believe it if I actually saw it. Like, it's where I'm at with all.
Well,
this.
There's that.
Well, I've heard this. I've seen this movie over and over again. And, you know, and going back to Tulsi for a second, I mean, I had Aaron Day on my show and he brought up something interesting about her. I believe wasn't she part of the WEF? Wasn't she part of like the Next Generation?
Supposedly she WEF? Was one of the young leaders in the WEF along with Mark Zuckerberg. I don't know how much truth I put in any of that.
I'm sure
there's a Q-tard out there in the audience that will, you know, send me a, you know, dissertation on the young leaders in the WEF, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Luongo's got a different view of it. Everybody's got an opinion, but here's what it boils down to.
I didn't until mean to they backwards, by the way. Sorry.
No, it's all good, man. That's what this is all about. Until they arrest somebody, it's a moot point. And I'm like you. I don't think arrests are going to happen. Like, they changed course. So Trump ran on Epstein. He ran on it. He ran on JFK. And then he gets into office. They release the binders. It's like, what the fuck is this? And then all of a sudden, Bondi says, "Oh yeah, there's thousands of videos of you know, kids being molested." And then all of a sudden, no, it was just Epstein. It was just his private collection. Like, they're doing it to themselves, right? I mean, clearly they're protecting Mossad and CIA and MI6. They're all involved in it. And everybody, even Alex Jones, has been saying Mossad 100% runs Hamas. Mossad 100% was running the Epstein operation. And okay, still no arrests. Nobody's been arrested. And the problem I have is that I know that Obama was on the island. I know the Clintons were on the island. So that all this stuff is linked together, and it's all very incestuous. So, you know, when do we, if they do arrest somebody, they burn down the whole system, because you know what they're going to do. If you go back to the scientists that came over with Operation Paperclip, you know, they all had shit buried in their backyard. They were all talking shit about, well, I'm not a Nazi, but that motherfucker over there is a Nazi, and that guy's a Nazi, but I'm not a Nazi. Go look at the files that are buried in my backyard. I mean, it's going to be the same thing, right? The realpolitik, they're all going to be pointing fingers at each other saying, oh, that guy's a pedophile. That guy's a pedophile. That guy's not a pedophile. And they'll be ratting everybody out and it'll burn down the whole system. And as far as I'm concerned, burn the fucking thing to the ground. Let's start over. But in Trump's case, he's created a crisis for himself and it's not going away. I don't care what anybody says. Epstein is not going away. There are still people squawking about it, right? Like we're seeing more and more traffic around 9/11. Like 9/11 was bullshit. So my point of saying all that is I don't see this ending in a bunch of arrests. I see this ending in some kind of disclosure, which burns down most of the system and the control grid to include penalties.
Well, they can't kill the signal, right? But they can increase the noise because these things aren't going away. The Israel's, you know, is not, that's not going away. The Epstein thing is not going away. So what are they trying to do? They're trying to just increase the noise level to dilute the signal,
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
You said it and earlier.
Go ahead.
Earlier, you're talking about how they are trying to get all the pieces and parts of a control system in place in a rapid because they're being driven by events, some event that we don't know. And one thing that I thought of, I was moving around here a little bit, was that the other piece is I think they do just enough stuff to keep everyone thinking that Trump is completely, you know, the dream of the Q people. Like the, you know, the announcements today with RFK Jr., you know, going after the mRNA stuff a little bit. I feel like they just try to keep enough stuff that enough MAGA kind of people think that Trump is still mostly legit. And that's what I feel like we're seeing going on.
Well, but I think with that too, and it's not that Trump, I think he's legit, but you also, like with Kennedy, I mean, he's a government guy, always has been. And I mean, he's talked about the wearables. So he wants to have wearables by the end of, by the end of the term. I mean, look at the people that he's employing in the CDC. I mean, Casey, I always get him screwed up. Callie Means is the brother. Casey Means is the sister, I think. Yeah.
So Mike, I just heard today that that's the next fight coming down for Kennedy. I just heard that being discussed this morning on the war room, that Casey or whatever has been identified as being problematic, and that fight is supposed to be coming down the pipe.
Well, Casey's his sister. She's the one that got nominated for the Surgeon General, which still hasn't been sworn in. And Callie is some type of consultant to the MAHA movement. But Callie was a lobbyist in D.C. I mean, if you look up, I think it's TrueNet, and look at his background and the company, that company and his involvement of that. You know, these people, they are, and these two, they came out of nowhere. They were on Tucker. They were on Rogan. And they were not around during COVID. They were not around talking about medical freedom. I never heard of these two until they hit the scene with Tucker and Rogan. Nowhere to be found. So, you know, I mean, it's good that Kennedy, I mean, finally lifted the mRNA out of, it's not in the EUA anymore. I think it's official. But to whoever said it earlier, I mean, what took so long? I mean, Trump signed more executive orders, you know, this week. I mean, why is this taking so long for this to be removed? And what are they working on next? I mean, Larry Ellison from Oracle was there the first 2 weeks of the new administration talking that they had a better solution for a vaccine. So this stuff isn't, Steve, like the glasses. This stuff isn't, I don't know. I think it all ties in. I think it ties in with Palantir. I think it ties in with big tech, you know, wearables, transhuman. I mean, I think all of this stuff is all connected. And I also think too, if I'm just going to add this real quick, getting back to the mobilization of the cities, you know, people are cheering for this. People are like, yeah, we need this. We've cleaned up DC, got to clean up Chicago. Have we heard this story before? Have we need more government involved? Because like you got people on the right that are like, yeah, we need this.
Well, Mike,
you also have people on the left you know, that are living in those neighborhoods that are cheering it on as well, because it's their kids and their friends and families that are the victims, the innocent victims that just, you know, get shot up by a random drive-by shooting in the middle of the night, you know. So yeah, I've worked a few of those calls in my time, and you know, I'm torn on that subject. You know, I want to see the streets get cleaned up and people just stop randomly getting murdered, you know, but I don't necessarily want that overreach. I mean, if there's,
well, there's no exit strategy.
Yes, right? That was there's the no exact point strategy. I was getting ready
there's
to
no
make.
Timeline. Yep. There's no timeline. And I think that's what we're all circling around, is that there's no timeline. Like, what's the end state? When do you hand it back to regular law enforcement? In DC, there's no end state, which means they could be there in perpetuity, and there's no way to extract them out of that situation without it being messy. And messy, I mean kinetic. And there's not here. The problem with Chicago is there's not enough law enforcement. And when you pull them out, you hand it back to the libtards that created the problem in the first place. You're not really solving the problem. You're staging the presence, but you're not solving the problem. And he needs to solve the problem. And that includes arresting people, like senior level people. And from what I understand from folks that are inside the system in the FBI, is that they really are cleaning house. They've arrested like 39 people within the FBI for committing crimes. I don't know what those crimes are, because they're keeping it under wraps. But the fact that they're arresting people in the FBI tells you that these people didn't think they were going to get caught. They didn't think that there was going to be any accountability. I mean, the Clintons are living proof of that. But at some point, in order to extract the troops out of the cities, you're going to have an end state and a handover criteria that says, this is what we're handing back, and this is the way you're going to keep it, or we're coming back. And I think all of those things wrap into Palantir, right? Because once, let's just say for argument's sake, that you get arrested by the guard or the reserve and you get handed off to some detention center for processing, everything that you're being processed is going into Palantir. So they already have a profile on you. And now they've got profiles on all these different people. What if part of the reason why they're staging is they know there's going to be some kind of attack, and they're staging and preparing for some kind of kinetic action that maybe Stacey Adams in the predictive program by the CIA was talking about around Al-Qaeda? I don't think it's Iran or Al-Qaeda, but there's a very real possibility that's part of the threat landscape. You can't dismiss it, but at the same point, you can't give a credibility and say, yeah, that's it. And the ambiguity about why they're deploying troops is the biggest consternation for most Americans. It's not just crime, because we've had crime in Chicago for how many decades? I mean, over 100 years, Chicago's been a, you know, crime-ridden hood. Same with New York. So what's different?
They're not deploying that many.
Yeah, but what's going to happen when, you know, if they end up getting deployed there, but what's going to happen if drug cartels are all of a sudden their business is being disrupted?
Well, that's,
you think they're they're just going to take that quietly?
No, because
what's going to happen if they start sniping? Sorry, go ahead, Steve.
No, we're seeing that blow up in Mexico right now. Did you see the fist fight in Mexican Senate today?
No, I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Can we see that here? I mean, is there any way we can get fist fights here in the Senate? I mean, I'm down with it.
But like, to Steve's point, though, if this thing escalates to that level where, okay, now you're in an urban warfare in, let's say, Chicago, and National Guards are getting, you know, picked off by cartel members in buildings, then what? You bring the tanks in? What, helicopters, drones? Where does this go? What Bracken said, you also have, sorry, I didn't mean to cut off the troop that you were just about to speak, but also with that, Bracken pointed this out too. You got a governor that's not going to help you. You got a mayor that's not going to help you, and they're going to do everything they can to hinder this whole thing. So if it escalates to that point, all of a sudden, this administration, they inherit it all.
Well, the Insurrection Act allows military response when either a local governor is overwhelmed or they're unwilling to do anything about a problem. But that means specific, actionable, time-based, known enemy. You can't just send National Guard troops or military troops out to cities and camp them and deputize them as law enforcement. That's completely, you know, illegal. But if there's a cartel problem or a, you know, a crime problem or something like that, and it's affecting the citizens, that's kind of the merit in which these troops have been deployed. The issue with what you're talking about, going to war with the cartel, I mean, we were able to fire cannons and, you know, in the middle of cities in the middle of East, in the Middle East. And, you know, that war went on for 20 years. You're not going to be firing TOW missiles and M1 tanks, you know, on in the middle of an American city. Like you said, you're not going to have A-10s flying over blowing up stuff in a city. So if the cartels activate and they do start shooting at local law enforcement, the military will get involved. And then the military is going to be left with basically drones, rifles, and intel. And so the surveillance apparatus is going to direct a lot of their efforts, but they're not going to be their first card they're going to play. Can't really be a kinetic card. It's going to be an electronic surveillance card. And then from there, they're going to have to do sweeps. So they're going to have to get their hands dirty. I mean, literally kicking door type hands dirty. But you're right. You can't just send military into a city and say, oh, these are the cops now because your cops suck or your DA sucks. So, you know, these guys are here. They're not going to be able to do that. But I can guarantee you that if the cartels start opening up open warfare in cities, even in Newsom State, the city mayors and the county boards of supervisors are going to be begging for military assistance. That it won't even be a question at that point.
But they'll be begging for it at that point because they won't have to share. It won't be their problem any longer. They want this. They would want, it would make sense to me that they would want this to escalate because there it's not in their hands any longer and they don't have to deal with it.
And they can blame Trump just for the problem they created that now turned into a kinetic problem. Exactly. It would work really well for their narrative.
Yeah. We'll see which way it goes.
Yeah. But at some point in time, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, sooner or later, you know, I think Ian kind of mentions this frequently, is that's going to be the fight on the home field. You know, it's going to be the cart. That's what I think he's been saying for some time now, is that, you know, we're so infested that it's got to be dealt with one way or another. So how is it done? You know, if it's not done with troops and, you know, heavy handed, you know, tactics.
Well, let me
financial and electronic.
Let me clarify that too. When I say cartels, I mean, yes, Mexican cartels, but I'm talking even domestic drug dealers, people that have dominated these ghettos for a very long time with their, you know, all of their illegal activity. So, I mean, I don't want to limit it just to Mexican cartels.
I think there's a variety of threat actors. Let's just call that. It's just a variety of threat actors. I think like I said, there could be multiple lines of operation at work here, right? We know that there's still millions of illegals here that have to be dealt with, and that portion of operations could be part of the reason why they're there too. Like I said, there could be multiple lines of operations at work here. We're not privy to it all. But the interesting movements in the last couple of days has just been the rhetoric more than anything else, because the rhetoric's changed. And every time they change narrative, it means that there's something that's something else there that the public's not aware of.
We do a go back.
Yeah.
I was curious what your thoughts were. I'm not a financial guy, but the government invested in the banks to bail them out in 2008. The exit strategy was they were going to pay them back the money that they bailed them out with. The whole premise of it's ridiculous with the Fed and the fiat currency. But now the confusion I have is the government getting invested in these companies. I think Intel gave up a 10% stake and you know, Palantir and these other ones. Did they use our money to buy that stake? Because 10% is institutional investor. That means you sit on the board and you make decisions for the company. So I'm not a financial guy, but this seems kind of concerning to me because that means you can influence and direct those companies, which means that there's not an isolation of their ongoing concern from a capitalistic point of view versus a government influence point of view. So to me, that is the recipe for literal Marxism, is to have the government own, you know, companies. And so how do they do that? And who's the decision makers? So if we own 10%, if the US government owns 10% of a major corporation, who do they send to the board meetings? How does that work?
I also want a 10% deduction on my taxes for that shit too, if they're not going to give me the money back. I want it back one way or another. Real quick, Bruce. So the earliest that I'm aware of for like this whole intel surveillance, all this government taking over tech kind of thing, goes back to Bill Benny with, I think it was the Red Line program that he created just before 9/11. And then Hayden came in and they raided it, raided his office, took all that stuff, and then turned everything over to a big tech firm. And then it became, you know, out of the NSA's hands, you know, into a private company. That's the earliest that I'm aware of when the government started this whole tech voyage.
Can we do a shitty U.S. Savings bond, a debt for stock swap for a position, and then wreck the company? That would be a good exit strategy.
Well, go ahead, Mike.
No. I was just going to say, it's an interesting question, Troop, who would actually attend the board meetings? Because I've never heard that before. So I'll have to ask one of my guests if they know anything about that. Aaron Day is a big technocracy guy, expert who I talked to him and Dave Collum together last week. And Aaron, I mean, claims this has been building up, I believe, since the Great Depression, the idea of a one world government. The technology just wasn't there like it is today. But this has been in the pipeline for, you know, much longer than 9/11. I find it interesting.
Mike, if you haven't seen that documentary on Bill Benny, look it up. A Good American. It's really telling into the early days of the NSA and setting up the whole spy apparatus. It's a must watch.
I'm writing it down right now.
You were bringing up, Troop, the idea with the stock ownership of the companies. And the question I had was either they just were issued it by the companies themselves, basically like Trump could have just intimidated them into saying, give me 10% or I'm going to make problems. Because I don't see any constitutional method for them to go ahead and acquire parts of companies that I know of, other than maybe they're just using color of law basically and just doing it and waiting for someone to say, you know, to take them to court on it.
That's not really true. They can use national security as a reason for it. They can claim nationalize, they could nationalize it too. I was just going to say that.
But what class of stock did they get? Are these A shares? Are these, you know, are these institutional shares? Are these open market shares? Like how the whole thing just seemed very mystifying to me.
Well, it's just like the lieutenant colonels getting commissioned with no training, you know?
Yeah,
there's so like I said, there's a lot of red flags around this, right? And I think the proof is going to be in how many, well, there's two parts to it. So part one is the proof of the pudding about the surveillance system is how fast they deploy it and what they do next. Tonight's definitely aligned with digital currencies. And then at the same time, how many different cities are they going to deploy the guard into, and what's the end state? Because we haven't heard an end state yet. And I'm I'm still laser focused on that because that's the linchpin in all of it, right? Is why are they there and how long are they going to be there? And the fact that he's got leverage over all of Congress, I mean, he clearly does, right? And maybe this is just as simple as going after the mafias that have been created by all of these senators, like the McConnell mafia, the Lindsey Graham mafia, the Biden mafia, because they're all crime families. Maybe that's what maybe that's part of the end state, is he's going into all the crime hubs, he's taking out all the key players. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways you can look at this, but the fact that we're seeing all these moves take place that we haven't seen in a very, very long time. Because remember, we put a million people into uniform in World War II, and they came from all walks of life, they came from all sides of businesses, mm-hmm. but we didn't own part of the businesses. So that's precedent there. It's where do they go next? What's the next piece of this that they're going to roll out to the public? And that's what I'm waiting to see and see how that develops, because I think it's going to be a tell in what their real strategy is. Ultimately, this surveillance system is going to fail for a variety of reasons. I can sit here and tell you, I don't have any sense of dread or sense of angst about it because I know it's going to fail. Question is why and what?
Well, how about the interview Mike did? And Mike, you've got to do a memoir with all the folks that you've interviewed. I've told you that before. But like Paul Craig Roberts said, it's the hackers that are going to be in control. You know, that's a very good possibility.
And that's scary,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he was the only one that said that too to this point. I thought that was, you know, that was something that I didn't realize. Because the systems were, you know, they'll always attempt to get hacked. I mean, Steve, you're a security guy. You could have the most stable security system, robust, and it'll still get hacked. But that's I go back to. That's where I go back to with the, you know, the overall. I mean, the digital. The currency might, the CBDC might not be there yet, but the foundation is. And the way I look at it, and this is what I said after the election, it's, to me, it's not about Soros any longer. Soros is 98 years old or whatever he is. He's out of it. I mean, he's still around, but it's the big tech mafia. You know, that's the WEF 2.0. And look at people are robots. Their phones are their CBDC. I mean, everything you do is on your phone. Everything. And young people, you're walking out of the store, they're like, they're entranced. They got the AirPods in. They're staring at their phones. So, I mean, they're playing the long game with all this. And, you know, I mean, I think the foundation's already for the CBDC. It's in place. It's not completely, they haven't merged it completely together yet. But it's pretty close.
There was a lot of discussions about this SALT typhoon or whatever it is, this Chinese hacking group that has interceded into a lot of telecom, like 200 companies have disclosed that they're compromised. And you're right, with looking at the whole, so several years ago, I was on a project to define this thing called social mobile analytic cloud. And it was the beginning of, they were talking about the bandwidth they needed to address these devices. So they wanted to push from IP version 4 to version 6. So we have more address space. And then once you have the address space and you can put the nodes out there and they're, you know, they're smelling, seeing, listening, hearing, deciding, acting, controlling. There's just hundreds of millions of things that are as big as the tip of this pen that you can put out in the wild. And with the low voltage circuits and the microarchitecture they have now, you could drive down the road a mile and you could pass a million of these smart devices. You know, they could be doing everything from sensing traffic to checking particulates in the air to determining if your muffler is too loud to checking the tint on your window. You know, all of them are surveillance focused, not necessarily on people, but surveillance focused as far as understanding and defining a section where they're deployed three-dimensionally. So you could literally have a console operator zoom anywhere in on a city and know everything that is going on in the city, down to like vibration on the, you know, how much traffic is on the road. So you have a lot of bandwidth, you have to have that address space, And now what are you going to do if the system that is running the control grid gets taken over? So 90% of the control grid is information that's being sent somewhere. That means that you're not, there's not a console operator moving a camera or operating a thing or an arm or blowing something up. It's all listening devices. They're all very passive information collection and gathering devices, and they're sending information so it can be analyzed so decisions can be made. They'll have a visual of an area. So 90% of that, you could take it offline, and it isn't going to have a net effect on anybody who's going up and down the street. But as you proliferate these devices, and you have devices that are deployed that can make decisions, they can, you know, they can see 500 streetlights down a road, and you know, and a mile this way and a mile this way, and they can just dynamically control the traffic, you know, based on search patterns. Well, what happens if you compromise that system, you know, in the middle of rush hour, and it just fuck traffic up, or turn on flood control valves, or discontinue water pressurization in a power plant or whatever. So we've already talked about the concerns that the power grid has, because a lot of these systems are easily compromised, but the systems that they're developing now are mass produced. They're cheap. The value proposition is not security. It is to get the thing out there. Dish TV or a network TV or one of those Dish Network, one of them, they bought a massive amount of frequency space from the FCC, and they've paid billions of dollars for it. The condition was that they had to utilize the frequency space within a certain amount of time, or they were going to lose their stake. And this is radio frequency waves. This is exactly what the whole 5G, control grid is all about, bandwidth. So they just started putting out devices that were just low-end, stupid things, no security, had pretty much no value proposition from a pecuniary interest, but they just put all the stuff out there to proliferate it so that they could block out that frequency space. And now we have a bunch of devices out there. If you look at all the telecom companies and the information collection, the marketplace for information collection, like a Palantir, and the zero effort that has been put into developing security around these microarchitectures as they're deployed, we've already built our own time bomb. We've already built this system where we have a large company like Palantir, with the blessing of the government, that's been put into a place to connect to and integrate all of these devices that are inherently insecure themselves, and then put them in a control operator position, and then also allow them the governance and the legal authorization to deploy even more of that stuff. So what happens when those systems are compromised? What happens when you have another salt typhoon or system like that, but now these are not the initial social mobile analytic cloud passive promiscuous listening systems that you could just subvert and not a big deal, but now these are actual interactive controlling systems that do health and safety functions. And now they're just compromised, or they can be controlled. And you don't even get into like all of the different drones and robots and androids and all the other stuff that can move around and self-articulate. I'm just talking about things that can control stuff like power, water, gas, traffic, communications, you know, heart monitors, all that other stuff.
SCADA systems, we're literally
building that.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say, we keep bringing up Palantir. I think something else is interesting is talking about Peter Thiel. You know, my friend Matt Smith, Doug Casey, and his son Maxim just put out a book this week. And one of the chapters was talking about patrons and how it's important. You know, you find somebody that you can provide value to, and in turn, this person who's, you know, higher up the chain than you are will, you know, teach you knowledge, you know, provide you support. And you look at Peter Thiel, like, he's got his hands in so many different things. All the way to the top to J.D. Vance, right? The whole story with how he met J.D. Vance in law school, and J.D. Vance went to work for him and, you know, helped him fund his venture capital group. And here he is, the number two most powerful person in the world right now.
Yeah, there's the
and others too. There's Peter Thiel's got his hands in like a bunch of different things.
So does Elon. So does Jeff Bezos. So does Bill Gates. I mean, Bezos is in insurance now, doing insurance, doing health. I mean, yeah, it's. I said this
including weather modification too. Well, you know, that son of a bitch apparently is fronting those companies too.
Well, what about Tether? We didn't even talk about Tether. And I didn't realize, you know, Tether has never passed an audit.
No, they never have.
They've never.
Yeah, that's that,
they're behind Rumble, I think. I think they're like the, aren't they a big part of Rumble?
I'll have to look. I don't remember. But the point I was trying to make is that the new aristocracy is not the aristocracies of old. It's the oligarch class, right? If you look at how much these guys have made since 2020, they're trillionaires. And, you know, at some point, that's going to be the next landscape we have to deal with, is how much wealth are we willing to allow people to accrue? Because at some point, they get like Bill Gates. Why is Bill Gates still walking around? The guy's killed millions of people, and he's still walking free. I mean, I think it was in the White House like 2 days ago. You got to ask yourself, why is this guy still walking free? And it's because he's got so much money, he's above the law, and that can't be allowed to continue. So there's the oligarch class, the new aristocracy, is they're into everything. They're across the spectrum of activities. It's not like Peter Thiel is not just, he's not just a Palantir guy. He's not just a PayPal guy. He's a transhumanist. He's going to do like a four-part series on the Antichrist. I mean, he's trying to architect the return of the Antichrist, for Christ's sake. I mean, that should tell you these guys are all loon bags. And the fact that they think they're above, you know, above the law, and that they're gods themselves, that should tell you everything you need to know.
I mean, if anybody's the Antichrist, it's fucking Gavin Newsom. I mean, he fits the profile, looks like it, you know.
Yeah, but he can't.
Bitch needs to go.
Yeah, but these people, though, these tech people, though, I mean, I think it's WEF 2.0. And I think they will usher in, you know, whoever the next, I don't want to speculate on 28 because it's just so far away. But, you know, whoever, I think they'll select who they want to be the next president of the United States in 28.
Well, they selected Trump. There was no way statistically he could have won, given the amount of institutionalized cheating they put in place between 2020 and 2024. Right. They stole the down ballot. Nobody talks about the down ballot. They clearly stole the down ballot, and nobody cares, right? There's no way that Mark Kelly won in Arizona. There's no way that Lindsey Graham won a second term. I mean, another term. There's no way. But the down ballot was stolen, and you know, it's obviously that was the deal they made, that Trump gets back into office, they keep the down ballot. I mean, I don't disagree with you, Mike. I think there's a lot more to it than that. I think it's more than just WEF. I think that you're seeing the UK, the EU, and Canada, as well as Australia, they're going full commie. I mean, they're full on communist countries now. And they're not slowing down. Like the climate lockdowns in Canada, that's all communism right out of pawns in the game. So I definitely think that JD Vance is going to be installed in 28. He's being positioned for it. But ultimately, I think their system's going to fail. And I think it's going to appear for a while that they're successful, but then they're going to fail. And they're going to fail for a variety of reasons, one of which is, you know, we may see people mass non-comply once the scoring system goes into place. You know, the concern I have is that the generations, the 20s and 30-somethings right now, they've all given up. They've given up on owning a home. They've given up on having anything like their parents had. They've given up on the system. They don't care about their privacy. They definitively don't care about their futures. So, you know, that's where my concern is. And who knows, maybe there'll be a catalyst event that moves everybody in the right direction. Who knows?
Well, they can't. There was one. Right? They can't afford a home.
I just wanted, before we moved off the. So Brushbeater had a very interesting podcast the other day when he was talking about all the Antifa on the software developers on the Microsoft campuses and so forth. You know, they're part of the team that's developing all this software. you know, God knows what kind of backdoors they have into these AIs and these other systems. You know, who knows? I mean, you know, they could throw it all, you know, for a big loop too at any point in time.
That's true. I mean, all that's true. There's a, like I said, there's a lot of different attack surfaces that we could be looking at right now. I'm not so much concerned about the activism as I am concerned about false flags. Because I think that, like the Microsoft thing, that was dumb, right? Seven people, they left cell phones, which is illegal spying. I mean, that some of them are going to jail, the rest of them got fired. They're all retards. So, but it shows you that there are still believers out there, right? But the it's like Antifa at BLM. Their reach has been really, really diminished. But you're right. Most of the tech crowd is predominantly liberal. Not all of them, but a good portion of them. So, and then don't forget the foreign nationals that are on H-1B visas that are also doing development too. So, you know, you're talking about people with no allegiance to the Constitution, which is part of the problem. But that said, I know that Google had all kinds of problems developing their social scoring system because they had basically an internal revolt when people figured out what they were building. And these are liberals. So I'm not as concerned about that as maybe others are, but I think, you know, to Mike's point, if any system can be hacked, if it's connected to the internet, you can get into it some way, shape, or form. And that's what I'm waiting to see. It's one of those key systems that's compromised. And just so we're perfectly clear, a lot of our classified systems have been compromised over time. So it can happen. And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when it happens and how bad. So I think there's a bigger possibility of these high-speed systems get co-opted by one of our enemies as opposed to it being successful and co-opting us. But I could be wrong.
So what happens when you have a military that's completely dependent upon the warfighting technology they have? So, you know, when we were in the service, we were taking our lensitic compasses and waving them at night to keep tanks in a formation so they wouldn't crash into each other. And then they went network op, and now you can see all of your wingmen and everybody, you know, on a screen, right? You're not running comma wire anymore. Everything's, electronic and digital. You don't have to read a compass. You have GPS, you have navigation. They took the upper rack of windows out of military aircraft because they don't even train star navigation anymore for pilots. So what happens when all that shit fails? And now you have the most advanced military in the world with the most advanced equipment in the world. And that equipment operates on 90% information and technology that at that point is no longer available. So now you have the greatest military in the world at 10% capacity and no training to fall back on manual warfare. What is going to be the result of that? I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory, but
yeah, that's a dying place mission is what that is. Yeah. So coming up on an hour and a half, we should probably wrap this up. Any other final topics we should talk through before we wrap this up?
I was wondering if they purchased a stake in all these businesses with the gold that they didn't find in Fort Knox. Like, did anybody ever figure out what happened with that inventory?
They're doing it tomorrow. I just saw they're going to audit the Fed and they're going to go to Fort Knox tomorrow. Geraldo's going to be, it's going to be his show.
Oh, Geraldo, yeah. And Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh, Jesus. we're saved. I hope that was a joke.
Yeah, we're saved.
Yeah, I mean, Geraldo is partly responsible for why we have all these lunatics on the streets anyways, back when he did his whole, you know.
Well, he did the Al Capone vault, remember that? Wasn't that a whole episode? Yeah. And there was nothing in it.
Yeah, and, you know, he did expose the abuses of the insane asylums and all that stuff. But, you know, the fix wasn't to shut them all down and then release them all on the streets and let them breed. You know, that's just why we're all fucked up.
Well, there's a variety of reasons why society's falling apart. But that's the other thing too, is we're watching society fall apart too. So I think it's very interesting where we're at, because if you would ask me prior to November of 2024, if we would be in the position, I was convinced that along with several other people that we were going to be in the midst of a hot civil war. And now we've got Trump, and a lot of people don't know which way he's going to go, right? I mean, it's clear he's going after his political opponents, the people that were, you know, instrumental in the court cases against him. But there's a lot more to it. And I think that, you know, like I said, the tell is going to be how many cities these troops go into and what the next actions are, what the exit criteria are going to be, because that's going to be the tell. And I think we'll see that in the next few weeks. I don't think it's going to take very long, but they could stretch it into October, November. We'll see. I mean, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks.
What do you think about the gigantic silver penis spaceship heading towards Earth right now?
I don't think anything of it, honestly. It's like the arrests. Until, you know, gray aliens or blue chickens or whatever jump out of it and it's hovering over DC, doesn't hold in. We're still spectators. We're still going to be watching it, right?
That guy.
And if the question is, do I want to have an alien invasion versus a civil war? Absolutely. It'd be far more entertaining.
Hey, you want to go see aliens? Just go to Walmart. You'll see plenty of them running around there.
Are you saying
illegal ones too?
Well, whatever you want. I mean, you'll see the whole band from the original Star Wars playing there at any local Walmart that you go into. I love the alien talk. Like, just go to Walmart. They're all over the place there. Bring your laser gun and your laser.
Well, you know, Elon is pissed that he's not occupying Mars right at the moment, because that object is supposed to pass by closest to Mars. So, you know, Elon's got to step up his fucking game, and get his shit out there and start occupying it so he can catch these things early.
As far as I'm concerned, aliens are more real than Antifa.
They are. I was at Walmart last week. I saw a bunch of them. Go on a Saturday night at like 10 o'clock. That's usually when they're all out.
Well, the freaks come out at night. You know, those, you know what I'm saying?
See vampires there too.
Yeah. So here's the interesting thing about the UFO thing. The interesting thing to me is, so I was listening to this YouTube podcast today that was posted in Twitter, and supposedly Voyager 1, which by the way was only supposed to live for 20 years, and it's now 50 years and still going, still sending data. Supposedly it sent back data that there was like 312 objects that passed by it that were emitting signals and moving in basically in formation. And if that's true, that's going to be interesting. But what I find interesting about the whole narrative now is that we're hearing more and more narrative around disclosure of UFOs and alien technology and whatever else, right? And if you watch whose podcast with Danny Jones, he's had probably 5 guests in the last week talking about UFOs. And you really got to ask the question, why now? Why are they disclosing this now? I mean, maybe the rush to build this surveillance system and this control grid is because they know some kind of alien contact is on the way and they can't do anything to stop it. And if you look at it from that perspective, you could make a couple of arguments. The first one is, you can't take the politics on this planet to space. Just can't, right? Every alien species that we would run into would think we were, you know, barbarians. And you could make the case that maybe they're trying to put this all in place because they know that's coming and they want to make sure that the population's in line and they don't go off the reservation, right? Who knows? I mean, it could be anything, right? But I find it interesting that those narratives are building almost every day now, and there's more and more of them every single day. The other thing I do in lieu of looking at all that is I go out to Netflix and I go out to Amazon and I go out to Facebook and some of the other social media platforms, and I see if there's a trend. Am I seeing that show up in shows and movies and and videos out there. And yeah, we're seeing more and more of that, right? So we're seeing more things about alternate realities. We're seeing more things about interdimensional beings. We're interdimensional. In fact, the last Indiana Jones was about interdimensional beings. And
imagine the dating preferences, Steve. It got like aliendating.com, the eyes, hair color, number of breasts. It's just like, imagine the possibilities. We're going to do that. Build an alien dating site.
You got too much time.
Get ahead
of it. I don't know how you have enough time, Troop, but you've got too much time on your hands.
Well, my point of saying all that is that the interesting part of the alien stuff is that I'm seeing more of it, and I'm seeing the narratives really centering around interdimensional. And we've heard Tucker talk about that. We've heard several guests on Sean Ryan's show, now guests on Danny Jones's show. We're seeing a wide variety. And I think it's very interesting that the timing of that is coinciding with this social score. But like to your point, Mike, if you can't control the information space, you flood it with garbage and you obfuscate through garbage. And that could be it too. Who knows? So, but you know, if I listen to the Cliff High stuff that people send me all the time, I mean, he's talking about, what is it? I can't remember the terms he uses. He uses these weird terms that, you know, the universe is telling us that we're moving to a different plane of existence. So, yeah, who knows? What's the word he uses, Bruce? What's the word? Ontology? No, it's not ontology. What is it? You know which one I'm talking about?
I've heard him say it numerous times.
Qualia.
Klingon.
No, it's qualia. And I'm like, what the hell is qualia? Is that a disease?
I've got Vulcan. The Vulcan.
Yeah, it's Vulcan. It's Klingon. Yeah, if I start speaking Klingon, we're screwed. All right, folks, we're gonna wrap this up for the night, gents. I appreciate you jumping on. We'll do this next Thursday. Until then, I'll be back Tuesday. I wasn't here Tuesday this week because I had somebody in town that I hadn't seen in 20 years. So. We will do this again next week. Until then, God bless everyone. One team, one fight.
Hoo-ah.
Thanks for the invite. See you guys.